What is up, everybody? My name is Austin Buckner.
Trevor Holder.
And I'm Tommy Trimbeth.
And again, this whole episode was just glazing, just kissing ass for an hour. But I have told anyone for the last 10 months, almost 10 months mm-hmm. since I met you at Des Moines Con, that this is my favorite podcaster, that produced my favorite podcast episode of all time. Anyone who has spent like longer than 2 hours with me, I'm like, I know how we're spending one of those hours, and I make them listen to
what?
It. So I think both trips up to Minnesota for Twin Cities Con the first time, and then when we went back to beat the snowstorm, I made my wife and Corey listen to your podcast. It's what gets me in the mind space to be a better podcaster before we go and do important interviews. And I felt like, oh God, she's going to hate me because I can't think of her name. L Holly. When we interviewed L Holly, I was like, this is an important one. She's very creative and she's very good at what she does. And we're kind of dumb and I need to get in the right headspace to be a good interviewer. And so I listened to your podcast because I feel like you ask great questions and get a lot of good answers out of your guests. So.
I love the duality of best podcaster.
Yeah.
And then we got too many words. Fuck you guys.
Yeah.
Piece of shit.
You know what? We've recorded for 2 hours now and we haven't thrown in like a fuck you Isaac and Jordan yet.
We did kind of with...
I think that was before we were recording.
Mm-hmm. It was before we were recording when I said that people with two middle names. Bastard. I'm kidding. I love you.
I don't. You're dead to me.
Oh, speaking of... We do this in every intro, and I apologize. But side note. So Isaac was like, I'm a Tigers fan for one day, and I hope LSU beats the shit out of the Iowa Hawkeyes tomorrow. And then I commented, I will actually murder you. And Facebook did not like it.
They never do.
They never do. They don't appreciate my humor. Well, neither did my previous employer.
Yeah. This happens too on our intros. Mm. We'll go off on tangents. I have a certain bone to pick with a certain group I'm in on Facebook that's about Apex Legends.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like, it's the Ice Cream Sunday podcast group chat.
Well, that too. We can get into that some other point.
I don't know what I did.
Oh, you know. Hey, let's troll bots.
Sorry.
So anyway, so this group I'm a part of is about Apex Legends, and I had come across an old memory where it was a game of Fortnite, and someone had recreated Apex Legends in Fortnite. And I was like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to share it with the Apex Legends group. This is going to be great. I made sure I followed all the rules. It had to be related to Apex. It had to follow very specific criteria. I followed all the rules. I posted. It got denied. And now I'm like, okay, maybe there was a misunderstanding. Let me see if I can't figure this out. So I tried posting, and everything has to be approved by admins. I tried posting, hoping that it just got to an admin specifically, that it wasn't going to get posted or whatever. And I was like, hey, I just need to talk to somebody. If anyone can message me, great. I just have questions or concerns or maybe some clarifications on why this got denied. So they finally get back to me and like, oh, it got denied because it didn't follow the rule. I'm like, but it does follow the rule. And they're like, yeah, but it's Fortnite, it's not actually Apex. I'm like, okay, but you see what I'm saying, right? And they're like, well, it does look like Apex, but it's not Apex. I'm like, that's not what the rules say. And they're like, well, you can do off topic tomorrow and then post it then. I'm like, that's not the point I'm trying to make. And
off so topic now, Tuesdays.
Yep. And now I have beef with them because I had to go back and forth between arguing semantics over stupid shit. The point of it was that it was something creative in Fortnite that was very much Apex related. When you can create an entire map in Fortnite following the same rules of Apex and have it look like Apex within Fortnite.
Let me ask you a slightly related question. How excited are you that almost the entire cast of Apex Legends is going to be at Des Moines Con this year?
I'm so excited.
Isn't it awesome?
Look, I tweeted out Roger Craig Smith after we went to Kansas City. Because for whatever reason, my dumb little goblin brain, I didn't think I wanted to meet him. We met Giancarlo. We met the main three from Final Fantasy.
She's like, I'm not even here anymore. This happens every intro.
Yeah.
I just love that, like, I just had one of the most wonderful interviews ever. Yeah. Like, not my first, but y'all were amazing. My mom is probably going to listen to this.
Yeah.
And she now has to listen to Trevor's 5-minute Apex Legends rant, having just no idea what Apex Legends
look,
is.
Just be glad it's not about Resident Evil.
Oh, don't get him started.
Roger Craig Smith was there, who does the voice of Mirage. Who does the voice of Chris Redfield. And I tweet out to him, like, man, I'm sorry we missed you. And I even made a comment about we made the pork chop recipe that was from Apex.
Yes.
And he's like, hey, man, next time. I'm like, he responded.
Besides JDF, who's the most impactful, like, celebrity guest you've ever met at a convention?
Ooh, met at a convention. That's a good question. Let's see. Meeting Walter Jones at my first con was like a huge highlight. That's Zach, the original Black Power Ranger.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like 19 at the time, looking all dorky in like a Clark Kent costume. But I have on my flip phone the Power Rangers like communicator ringtone. And when I'm like one or two people away in line, I play that. And then he like looks up and starts talking to his line, like, Zordon, stop calling me. And like, I couldn't believe I just had that interaction with an actual Power Ranger.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
Yeah, I was riding that high for really the next several cons.
We got to start this episode.
I got one more question.
Oh my God.
I know. Did you see the Netflix Power Ranger special?
What? No, of course I saw the Netflix.
I was like, no way.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What'd you think?
I think it was as good as it needed to be. There's like things I wish it had gone a different route, but I think like it'd be weird if they put a ton of production and budget into like an hour and a half Power Rangers like reunion movie or something. The fact that it's like 40 minutes long, clearly shot in like a week or two. Like, people complain about those CGI Zords. I think they look really good for like a recreation. And again, they had like 2 or 3 weeks to make that. They couldn't build miniatures and stuff for all that.
Right.
Yeah, I thought it did a lot of really cool stuff.
The fact that it was originally done too, and it wasn't taking off of like the Japanese, you know, reshoots and stuff like that. Like,
and now we know it used the correct Red Ranger, so that's really cool. The one that wouldn't weeks later make, or months later make a t-shirt line with Hitler quotes. So, yeah, now that's everyone's favorite Red Ranger. Good job for picking Rocky.
Yikes. Yikes. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Ice Cream Sunday Podcast. I want to let you know, and you know this, we have planned this interview for weeks now. So you being on the podcast, your interview being Trans Visibility Day was completely not by design, completely a coincidence. But when I saw that pop up on my like Google Calendar and then you posted about it, I was like, oh, well, that makes perfect sense.
Mm. But we got to take credit now, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll take credit now. It was totally by design. We are geniuses of the calendar.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's Easter too. Like, I heard Jesus was going to be on, and you were like, no, we're getting Tommy Turnbath.
Yeah. It was like, well, we could have the Lord, or we could have my favorite podcaster. So, you know, yeah. I've talked to you about this many times, and I'm terrible at accepting compliments, so I'm sure you probably are as well.
No, I'm great at receiving them. I'm awesome.
Well, there you go. Well, there you go. But, so I met you, and forgive me, your friend's name that was with you.
Let's see. So
you're like,
at Des Moines
she's
Con?
Not important. I feel like she won one of our like giveaway prizes. What doesn't matter.
Probably. Yeah.
But the opportunity to meet other podcasters at Des Moines Con was my favorite part. Like we met Isaac William Joseph of Too Many Words. We met,
Rob
Newton. We've met so many podcasters. I think we were the only ones that actually had a booth there, but a bunch of other podcasters came through with either guest passes or press passes and introduced themselves. And just the opportunity to network has been unbelievable.
And I'd like to point out that, when we went up to Minnesota for Twin Cities Con,
in my opinion, I think
that was a much bigger event. Mm-hmm. And even then, it was us and I think maybe one or two other podcasts that were there. And whenever we'd walk around the floor, the podcasts that were supposed to have booths there weren't even there.
Yep.
Like it was there. They had a banner. They had cards sitting on a table and then nothing.
And selfishly, like to be at Des Moines Con for those 2 days last year and then to be at Twin Cities Con, I hope that like in the Midwest area, people see us as like, those are the guys. You know what I mean? But
I'm hoping.
To meet you and then you're like, I have a podcast and this sounds really shitty, but I kind of get jaded because fucking everybody has a podcast now.
Mm.
Like when we started Title Pending, you and Corey, and then myself and David and Aaron, when we started Ice Cream Sunday in 2016 and ran for 14 long, strong episodes, no one even knew what a podcast was. You had to be like, it's this internet radio show. And like, I don't know. Sometimes we have guests on and you kind of have to like explain it. And then 6 years later, everyone has their own favorite podcast and Joe Rogan makes $200 million a year now. And, every farmer bro in the world has their own podcast. So like, even though I am a podcaster and I don't make the kind of podcast that like I hate, every time someone comes up to me and they're like, I make a podcast. I'm like, do you though? So I'm not going to lie to you. When you came up and was like, I have a podcast, we did talk about like, hey, it's about this, it's about comic books, shared interest. But I was like, I guess I'll listen to this. And then you sent me a link to It's Morphin Time. And I mean, just my favorite hour of podcasting I've ever listened to in my life.
Oh my gosh.
Like every time I think that I'm a good podcaster, I go back and I listen to that. And I'm like, we could be doing so much more. Because like when I edit the podcast, I'm like, I put a little background music behind our intro. And then I put like a little intro music, like our theme song. And then I put it at the end and I'm like, we are killing it. And then I listened to that episode and just the emotion in the first part when you're eulogizing both JDF and
Kevin Conroy.
I don't know why I can never remember his name. And then talking about your grandfather, and then talking about this crazy acid trip that like completely changed your life, and the sound
that was
effects,
such a good,
the sound effects
we'll get into it.
And the music and all of it. It's just like, oh, I'm not good at this.
Like what's weird though, is I had never done anything like that before. Like I barely started putting music for like a theme and outro in my podcast. Like I had to learn how to do so many things to incorporate that. Like found some online tools to help, like use AI to separate lyrics out of songs or at least turn them down. And I maybe it's just because there was some level of lived experience I was trying to recreate, but I still am kind of shocked it turned out as well as it did.
It's so good.
Like, there's so many things that you make it, and then a year later you, like, review your creative work. Like, ugh. But no, I listen to It's Morphin' Time, and I get pumped up. Like, I've had some really hard experiences this last year, and, like, I'll listen to that and feel so much better and feel so much more confident afterwards. So I am working on yet a third podcast series that I want to be just episodes like that, more for other people, maybe share one or two other experiences I've had since. But yeah, like, I've sent this to a lot of friends. I've had people, like, have dates with me and they listen to it first and they're like, I was kind of disappointed when I went on and, like, your other episodes weren't like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a podcast interview show or like a book club show.
Well, so if every episode was like that, obviously, like, knocks it out of the park every time. But even on your episodes that aren't like that, you seem to do so much research on your guests, which is the complete opposite of us. We just we wing it, you know. We're Paul McCartney in the 80s. It's a Wings joke.
thank you.
And just so well researched. The respect that you have for your guests, I that's why I say, like, when I'm trying to become a better podcaster or put myself in the headspace of, like, okay, these are the kind of questions I need to ask. I need to research and have that respect for my guests. Like, I always listen to your stuff first, like a day before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, that's how Tommy would ask these questions. She would research her guests and this is the kind of information that she's getting out of her guests. And so, I believe the Gen Z term is glazing. I believe millennials, it was like kissing ass, but I realized that this entire episode was just going to be kissing your ass and telling you how much I think you're the greatest podcaster on planet Earth.
Oh my gosh.
But, and I even said that on Facebook. I was like, I'm honored to have the privilege to sit down with you because, like I said, I meet a bunch of podcasters through conventions and online and groups that I'm in, but nothing has had like the impact listening to an hour and 5 minutes of It's Morphin' Time. So for those that don't know what I'm talking about, tell them, our listeners, our viewers, a little bit about that particular episode and how that came to be.
All right. So It's Morphin' Time was my big coming out episode for my first solo podcast. I was running Giant Sized Violence. A tokusatsu comics podcast where I talk about things like Power Rangers, Ultraman, Godzilla, especially Awaken the Realm of Comics.
By the way, did you do the logo design?
No, my friend Rose behind Ray Day Parade, they do almost all my logos. Like, they did that. They did the Transcendent Comics logo. I got a banner that'll be premiering at my first con next week at a Rod Con in Cedar Falls.
Did they come up with the idea for, like, the color scheme for it?
The original logo is mostly them, but pulling from, like, the show was originally dedicated to the comic Ultra Mega, so pulling from that. This one, I think it was maybe Ryan Otley from Invincible that did a trans rights variant cover of Ultra Mega, so I was like, hey, pull some influence from that for this one.
It was awesome. I love the logo treatment on that.
Mm. But, so, It's Morphin Time, like, I didn't even realize I was trans when I started this podcast. And then that kind of happened over about the first year and a half since it started. And I had this wild acid trip in, I think, about August, September of 2021 at my first ever music festival, summer camp in Illinois. And, like, I made a whole podcast about it because it is hard to put into words what I experienced on what was like half a tab worth of acid. Like, I experienced my own death over and over again in countless different ways. I experienced every person in the world, like being the same person, seeing myself in every man and every woman, and like saw myself at like my best potential self and my worst potential self. Like got to feel what it was like to like be a Power Ranger or feel like there's something important about this thing that you love that like you're going to put out into the world and like you need to find a way to like disassemble that and put that out and it's gonna like be important in the grand scheme of things, I guess. And so yeah, this thing was just banging around my brain for over a year because like you can't just tell someone that conversationally. Like, it's hard enough to get people invested in, like, hearing about a dream you've had. It's just so banal. And this, like, oh, you got to hear about this time I did drugs. Like, hear me out. It changed my life. But this was, like, so much more than that. And, like, that's what set me down the path of, like, oh, I can, like, present androgynously if I want. Like, I was around all these people that, like, it was dudes with beards and boho dresses or, like, just, I didn't think they were trans people. They were just being very free with their expression. I had never really taken into consideration that, like, oh, I don't need to be the like, basic-looking cis guy with the moron top haircut. And, like, yeah, I started growing my hair out. About 6 months later, a couple trans gals took me hiking, and, like, I think I just really needed permission to be trans, because, like, sure. I'd always thought, like, oh, I probably would have known since I was, like, 10. That's what I always hear on TV or on the internet. And once I'd had that of people being like, we're seeing a lot of our experience with you, bud. Like,
yeah,
they even said, like, hey, do you want to, they one asked the other friend, like, you want to come hiking with me to crack this egg?
So my brother is gay, and mm-hmm. he has mentioned that same thing where it's like, I always knew that I was attracted to men, but it wasn't until I moved, we're from a very small town of like 1800 people in Southwest Iowa. It wasn't until he moved to the Des Moines area and started getting involved with the Garden, Blazing Saddles, the gay community, and doing drag and being around more LGBTQ community members, that he was like, I feel like I got that permission from that community to be a member, mm-hmm. to be part of it. So it's interesting to hear you say, like, I kind of needed this permission to be myself, to be my authentic self, which is, it's that is my favorite part, being an outsider, mm-hmm. looking in to that community, is just how welcoming it is to just, yeah, like, you have this about you. These are the things that you're interested in. And it's, I think if you're a bigot, like many of them that I grew up with, you look at that community and you're like, oh, it's all about sex. It's all about their sexual identity. And you start going to these bars, or you start going to these and being involved in, you know, pride festivals or these events, and you get to know some of these people, and it's like, very little to do with sex. Mm-hmm. It's more about we are this group of people that a lot of people don't understand the way that we think or what we're into. And then you find other like-minded people that are like, yeah, we accept whatever you're into. And very little of it has to do with the actual sexual identity or whatever. So it's very cool to hear you say that. That you felt also that it's like, I didn't technically need permission, but like I got it from this very accepting group of people.
And yeah, so bringing it back to It's Morphin Time, like I knew I wanted to at least put this experience out there because it was such a like Rangers inspired experience. And like here I am talking to people like behind that show or like creators in that realm. And I wanted to be able to like share this in a way that like would mean something to them or like would stand out. I knew that this would be something that's not like any podcast I have ever heard before or since. And I also knew that like I couldn't express this with just words alone describing what I was going through with the trip. And so I incorporated a lot of music, like even learned some very minimal amounts of sound mixing and music, like remixing to do this. And I've had people tell me that that's like really helped them sell the experience of tripping. Like people who've never done drugs before. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I felt like I was there on the trip, or like it was taking years to go through all this stuff. So yeah, it took me a good year to just find the right way to put this to words. Like there's even an early, just off the cuff audio version of It's Morphin Time where I'm just trying to like recount to my microphone, like what happened to me. And it was rough. Like it's not good. And like, okay, I need to like properly script this. I can't just like go off my memory of the experience. I need to structure this. Kind of helped. There was a few plane rides I was on. I think it was on the trip where I actually came out to my mom on the flight back. And so I'm just like stuck in this plane. I put on some of the music I had heard at summer camp, things that like, there was music that knocked me back into the trip sometimes. I started to find the triggers that would do it. Because like there was like a month after the trip that I really didn't know if shit was real or not. Like I'd feel reality slipping. If I got high, I would especially feel like I was about to figure out I was already dead again. And like I had to call a friend who actually took the same acid I did and was like, fine. And
had they tripped before?
Yeah, they
you think had. It might be different because that was your first experience.
Yeah, I'd never done anything like with psychedelics before.
Sure.
How scared were you? Like even after everything was said and done, and you continued to like kind of lose grip. Like was that scary or was or
so during the trip? Like it was a little weird because I was almost celebrating it like with my girlfriend at the time of just being like, oh, this is like the best day I can imagine, or it was like the best day of my life, like lucky me that I get to die getting run over by a golf cart or something on the best day of my life experiencing all this new stuff. And like my partner at the time was not good support after this trip. Like something she said having tripped before is what tricked, like kicked this all off, like me asking like, hey, are my legs okay? Like, oh, they're not there. And that's when I like literally fell to the ground and started to spiral out of existence. And like there were clearly moments of panic and moments of euphoria in the trip. Afterwards, it was just a lot more ominous and like scary. Like if I just smoke a little weed and all of a sudden think like I'm gonna walk up the steps of my basement and it's going to be like the end of Evangelion. Everyone's going to be applauding. And like, that's going to be me rejoining the collective consciousness or like, I don't know, realizing I've been dead this whole time again. And like, just even feeling like my arm movements, like I was talking to someone, they were doing like the same thing I was during the trip. Like that. I felt like my arm was moving me backwards and forward, backwards and forwards through
it
time.
It happens every time.
So yeah, afterwards it was scary. Like I had to stop doing any weed or anything for a while.
Interesting.
And thankfully the one friend that I had called about this, like they had been a very good presence. They then moved in with me for like a year or so. And like any other time I'd try psychedelics after that, it was in a much more controlled, safe environment and nothing like the first time. I didn't like leave my body or have any kind of spiritual experience. Just like, oh wow, colors and lights and everything are weird. And like my body feels great.
Kind of felt like with everything that you described on that episode, which, you know, we're just going to keep gloating about it. Like, it's so good. I kind of felt like I didn't even need to be on any psychedelics. Like, you perfectly described it.
Exactly.
And like, it felt like I went on the trip with you. And I'm just like, again, when I was listening to it, I was playing video games. There were several times where I just had to stop and just kind of listen and just take it in. And just listen to how you described just so beautifully and perfectly the trip you went through, like going through all of it and just how you felt, what your experience, what just everything. It just, I felt like I was with you. So.
And it's interesting that you say that you don't have an extensive history of like music production and things like that, because that's one of the things that I love the most is, so you're, I messaged you earlier today and I was like, yeah, so I have, absolutely Story of a Girl stuck in my head because of listening to your podcast. So you're talking in the script that like you as the narrator is talking about like you're dying over and over and you're experiencing things over and over. And then in the background, you hear that song begin and then repeat and go to the beginning and then play it again and then again and again. And so those kind of things in the background, like just brilliantly done. One of the things I love the most is that you help the listener out by telling them in a very comedic way that this is the trip and then this is reality. My favorite part of the entire episode is when you're like, and then I saw a Sasquatch play saxophone and you're like, that actually happened, which Sasquatch is the fucking shit. Yeah, I love yeah. so much. So, yeah, like little things like that. And just the way that it's written is just, Yeah, it's brilliant. Even if it wasn't in a podcast, I think just the you know, the script of it, or the transcript or manuscript or whatever you want to call it of the episode, just being able to read that, I think.
I think transcript really fits.
Hey. Good job.
Hats off, my friend. But yeah, just an incredible experience. And so I guess the question I wanted to ask you was, did you feel, just to relate to it with my brother, for example, like always knew that he was attracted to men, but even in high school dated a girl and then finally came out in 2012 after he had graduated high school and graduated college and all of that. Did you know, hey, you know what? I do feel feminine at times. Did you have that in your youth, or was this acid trip like light switch? Oh shit, I get it now.
The acid trip was more the like, hey, look at all these moments in your life that are telling you this, that you've just like moved right past, like down to the things that like you thought were just maybe kinks or something, but are actually like way more deep rooted, not like a sexual thing for you. Like there were like, I was kind of lightly cross-dressing in secret a lot growing up, like I don't know, things I could do like under my clothes, or just like things that people wouldn't be able to find out right away. And I did a lot of like research, because at first, like, I was out in the country in a tiny, like outside of a tiny Iowa town, had like 200 students total in my whole high school. Mm-hmm. And so young me thought I was like the only person in the world that must be doing this. And thankfully, I started to find like communities online. At first, it was like kind of cross-dresser communities. And I'm like, okay, so other men like wear women's clothes. Cool, I guess. And then like I came across trans people on YouTube through this. I'm like, well, who are these people that are they like just really good at this? What's the deal? And I think I even offended one or two people just being like, so what's the difference between you and a cross-dresser? And I'm like, okay, internet asshole that they don't realize is like 14 on the other side of things. And for like years after that, it was just like, I just think they're neat kind of meme thing. Like, ah, gosh, I wish I was a trans person, but I'm just like a lame, lowly cross dresser. And to the listeners at home, if you're having thoughts of being like, I wish I could be a trans person, that probably means you're trans. Like, don't be like me and require
wish
an
granted.
Ego death.
Okay. Off topic. But again, I grew up with bigots, and they're like, well, I just think that like, if we teach kids about gay people, then like, one of, you know, like my kid's going to be converted to be gay. And it's like, here's the thing. No one's converting your kid to be gay. If they are attracted to the same sex, they're gay. Like, it's just, no one's like, you know, drink the Kool-Aid. It's just, yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so like, funny when people are like, they're going to turn me trans, they're going to turn me gay. It's like, maybe you already are, you know?
There's someone in my life that, I guess they're no longer in my life at the moment, but they're very much a, like, almost a proponent or a defender of conversion therapy. Or like, the Mike Pence stuff comes out, and they're like, well, there wasn't actually electroshock therapy at those camps. That's out of context. I'm like, but the fact there's a re-education camp or a camp with a concentration of queer people that they are trying to make stop being queer by psychologically torturing them.
Yeah.
Like through indoctrination, all that.
That's a pretty big problem there, bud. And like that you don't see that makes me not want to keep you in my life. And I think a lot of those people, like if they think they're going to get turned gay or turned trans, like, I think you think that praying away the gay is working,
yep.
But you have all these fears still, and I think that's maybe a sign it's not working.
Yeah. Show me where it has worked.
Yeah, my grandma, 99.5% of the time, the nicest, sweetest woman, but she still has this very like old school conservative, like, I don't hate the sinner, I just hate the sin.
Mm.
And when my brother came out, it was very much that. It's like, I still love Mikkel, but, you know, being homosexual is a sin. And it's like, that's the difference between you and I, is that I don't think it's a sin. I just think, like, you know, the happiest relationship I've ever seen my brother in is with a man. And it's because, like, he gets to be himself. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he was miserable with, no offense to Emily Bingaman. You're a great person. And I'm sure you don't listen to the podcast, but if you happen to, great person, but like,
what's up?
That relationship that he had with Emily didn't work because, like, he was not attracted to Emily. You know what I'm saying? He was just trying to, like, get by in this really shitty rural Iowan town where, like, if you are anything but straight, white, and Christian, it is incredibly difficult for you to live there. So he's like, well, I'm straight and I'm white and I'm Christian. And then you leave that environment and get an opportunity to be who you really are. And it's like, oh,
wait a minute.
I'm so much happier. You know?
But I suppose, like, I don't think any bigots listen to your podcast from everything I've heard.
I would hope not.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did just to be pissed about something.
But, yeah, like, you know, true. most bigots don't know they're bigots. And
that's fair.
Yeah, like, that's true.
If, like, okay, I myself have been in almost every camp when it's come to trans acceptance, just because, like, it's radical if you haven't even met a trans person until your mid-20s, or at least, like, formed a connection, and then slowly learning these things of, like, you know, we go through the, like, well, what about sports? Or, like, I don't know about surgeries on kids, and that's all just, like, narratives. Like, no one's doing surgeries on kids or anything like that. That's just getting them to scare you so you think you have a reasonable standpoint on something that's actually really hurting a lot of people and making you be like, I support trans people, but... So when people talk about, like, being worried that their kids are gonna become trans, like, or gay, I mean, I get the fear because as, like, if you're coming from a standpoint of a straight cis person and you're like,
sure,
I don't want my kid to have a more difficult life. Yes, I want them to be themselves, but, like, I also don't want them to be discriminated against or get hunted by potential future Republican parties. Like, the being exposed to these ideas, learning about them in school, or, like, finding out trans people exist, letting your kids talk to them, that's not going to turn them trans. It's just going to really cut down on the amount of time your kid hates themselves or is hiding everything about themselves. And just the version of your kid you think you love is the mask they're putting on to, you know, like, to conform to what they think you want them to be. Mm-hmm. That's not your actual kid. That's something that they're going through a lot of pain to present.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you, so in your comic book,
When We Transform.
Yes. So the main character, David, who then becomes Dana, the whole first issue is this conversation that the main character has with their mother.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this unconditional acceptance of who Dana is, which I think is lovely. My question for you was when you came out on that plane ride home and explained this to your mother, was it the same thing? I guess what I'm asking is Dana's story the same story that you received yourself, or was that, are you writing that from the perspective that's what you would have liked to happen?
So it's not exactly the same. Like, this might be surprising, but I was never, like, a transforming superhero in my past. That's just fiction.
Damn it.
Why are you here?
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah. No, sorry about that.
Again, but could have had Jesus. And
yeah. Well, I also kind of came back from the dead and went through hell. So, like, you're getting trans rep and that experience on one podcast. Yeah. So I still think I was the right choice.
All right.
But
I concede.
Like, it wasn't obviously wasn't exactly the same, and it wasn't a case of, like, she knew I was trans this whole time, but she could tell that there had been something going on with me, especially as I was, like, growing my hair out longer than it'd ever been, and just been way more confident the way I was presenting. I had also gotten divorced about a year before that, and she had thought maybe this was part of it, which, like, I didn't realize I was trans until post-divorce, but I think feeling like I couldn't be myself around someone and not knowing what exactly that meant of being myself, like, that definitely was a factor in, like, how I was navigating this constant relationship. But, like, my mom was just very immediately accepting. She could tell that something was going on and, like, was just kind of glad to know what it was. And going into it, I'm like, okay, it's going to suck if I'm stuck on a plane for 2 or 3 hours with a mom that's, like, not accepting.
Yeah.
But it'll be a good nail in the coffin if this is when I have to cut my relationship here.
Yeah. I'm like,
okay, it's just us. We can work this out here. And if you can't work it out in the moment, it's going to be hard to move forward from here.
Yep.
And yeah, thankfully she was great. Like, I don't know how coming out would have gone if I figured this out when I was 18 or 14. Because, like, we just didn't have the words for it yet. There wasn't, like, any public representation that we would have come across other than, like, Silence of the Lambs. And
so do you feel like when you decided to finally come out, that it was kind of just, like, the perfect time for you to do that?
So I... okay, I'm trying to remember if I'd even started HRT, or, like, hormones transition at this point yet. But I, as soon as, like, the realization sat in that, like, I could be and almost definitely was trans, and that's why I felt connected to all these trans people I was either friends with or, like, my trans ex-girlfriends, and I wasn't going to stay in the closet a minute longer than I had to. So, like, I took my good friend's advice, like, the first trans person I had really connected with, the first trans person I had dated, and she was like, okay, what do? Call the university hospital that's, like, well-known for its healthcare. Mm-hmm. It's going to take you, like, 6 months to get in, but get your appointment there. But then also call Planned Parenthood because they can get you hormones within, like, a week or two. So I did just that, started that whole process, and it was, like, immediate. Like, I'm not doing this any longer. I think this is perfect. I'm going to love this. And, like, just started to feel a lot better. And it was on the way back, actually, from a cousin's wedding where, like, this was kind of my last outing as Grant. And, like, I just didn't like that I had to wear men's clothes, like, for these pictures. I'm like, yeah, this isn't the version of me I want to put out in the world. It was where I first started to get to come out to family. Like, I really love my cousins, so came out to one, like, the night before, came out to the other literally as I was leaving a reception of, like, hey, didn't want to take any of the spotlight, but my name also is changing. And so, yeah, like, I knew my mom would probably be accepting just since, like, she'd been really cool with the queer friends I'd had through college. I think I had known at least, like, one or two non-binary people. She'd had a few queer, non-binary, maybe even trans students in the years since. And I think that really helped open her mind. Like, she was also like, yeah, those were always, like, the best students. They were always really considerate and, like, kind and thankful when I was, like, giving them one-on-one help. So, yeah, she was fully understanding and on board once I came out. And I just feel like so many coming out stories I see in media, you get the, like, angry parent, the life falling apart. Mm-hmm. And it didn't go well with every family member I came out with. But my mom is a freaking saint and, like, just did so much for me growing up, like, kind of having the single mother experience without being a single mother and, like, raising us almost completely by herself. And yeah, like, I then went on to take her maiden name as my last name because I'm like, okay, it's you and it's my grandpa that, like, I look up to most in this family. Like, this is the name I want to carry forward.
So I wish that my brother, just to go back to him, he came out a year almost to the day after my grandfather passed away. So he came out on National Coming Out Day. Mm-hmm. So October 11th, 2012, 10/11/12, which I thought was cool. But so my grandfather passed away a year before, never knowing, probably suspecting, but never truly knowing that his grandson is gay. But just to go back to what you said about, you know, your parents wanting to always protect you and not wanting it to be difficult for you. My grandfather had that conversation with me when I was very young. It was like, hey, this is a very white and can be at times racist town. And you're not only are you not fully white, but your mother was also, you know, like a teen mom. So you got a lot of things going against you in terms of like public perception. So what you have to do is just be really fucking good. So everything that you do, always trying to be on your best behavior. I didn't drink until I had my first beer the day I graduated or the night I graduated. My friends and I had never drank. So like Jack, Matt, Christine had never drank. The four of us drank our first beer because we were like, well, we're going to have to get used to it before we go to college because that's what everyone does. So he has this conversation with me when I'm very young, like maybe 12, 13 years old. And he's just like, you just have to be undeniable, just as the best you can possibly be. And I wish that my brother had come out in enough time for my grandfather to have that same conversation with him, you know, because he always wanted us to be like life to be just as simple and as easy and as safe as possible. And I wish that that conversation could have happened, you know, kind of like you had with your parent that was very supportive. I wish he would have had someone like a family member that's very supportive, because again, not to talk down about my grandmother, but my grandfather probably more accepting than my grandmother is. And my brother has a lot of support in the Des Moines LGBTQ community, but in his family life, not so much. His mother, my mother, is with a guy that's very much like, I don't care if you're gay. I just don't want to know about it. I just don't want it in my face. And it's like, well, that tells me that like, if I'm Mikkel, that tells me like, I can't be my authentic self in front of this guy that my mother is dating, my mother's with. You know, if you don't want to see it, don't want to hear about it, don't want to know about it. Like, obviously like my brother's not going to talk about sex with our stepdad, but like I said before, like that community, that it goes beyond like, hey, I am a man that has sex with men. You know, that there's more to it than that. And the fact that he can't be his full self around our stepfather, like that, I don't know, you know, it's one of those things that bothers me and makes me so happy that you say you have someone, especially family, that was supportive of you coming out.
And I think I would like to say out there to anyone who's like struggling with the decision of whether or not to come out to their family, like, I can't guarantee that it's going to go well or that your family will still accept you or even still be in your life in the same way. And I know that's so daunting to people who are that close to their family or feel like that's an important part of your life. Mm-hmm. But just like your brother, like finding this community among other queer folk in Des Moines, like, even if things fall apart with your family, you're going to find some kind of found family that will love you exactly as who you are. And it's going to help you just climb to be the best version of yourself and the most authentic version of yourself. So either A, your family's going to accept you and they're finally going to love you for who you actually are rather than the mask you wear around them. Or B, it's not going to go well. And screw them because they don't deserve to be in your life anyway if that's going to be how it is. And you will find people that it's going to be better with. Like, I've absolutely loved the whole queer, like, found family aspect of becoming part of this community. And, like, I feel like I have some level of, like, matriarch vibes among the trans people in my home area around Iowa. Maybe not gonna drop exactly where that is so I don't get murdered by like the one bigot fan that's really looking this out, but like I give people rides to, like, we arrange a roller skating night every week for like queer and trans folk. I have a very good hosting space, so I try and like have people over. I made Thanksgiving dinner for all these people.
That's awesome.
And like, not to like air any family dirty laundry here, but like, there's a reason I can easily come here on Easter Sunday to record. And maybe not being home, quote unquote, for family holidays would be hard. They've been the best holidays of my life, though.
Yeah.
Like, I talk about the Christmas and It's Morphin Time where me and my current girlfriend got together. And, like, that's been amazing. But, by the way, shout out my girlfriend, Ari. She's also a writer and has made me way better writer by, like, hearing all my story ideas and...
Speaking of holidays, why cats?
Why cats? Oh. So,
I mentioned Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I get that, but why cats?
So to fill everyone else in, I mention on It's Morphin' Time that Christmas that I don't know, maybe I saved my girlfriend's life. Maybe it was a magic moment. Maybe I morphed. It sure felt like that.
Mm-hmm.
We watched Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Cats. And part of that's because Cats is unironically my favorite movie. Like, I have this whole episode you should check out if you haven't already on how Cats and Mortal Kombat are kind of the same thing.
I need to listen to it right yes, do. Now.
And
oh, I gotta know.
So I'll get into my whole Cats spiel, I guess. Like, when Cats first came out, I had a friend, like one of my first like gender non-conforming friends, like arranged for a bunch of us to go to Cats, hot box in the car outside, go into the theater, and like just this is like week one or two of Cats. Like, we're gonna laugh and enjoy this for what it
now,
is.
Now, to be fair, I've never watched Cats High, so this may change everything.
That will change everything.
I just want clarification for me. Are we talking about the new Cats
yes.
movie? Okay.
And so we go in, and like, we're laughing, we're making jokes, and we're expecting to get ejected from this theater. And we're like, well, who cares if we do? It's Cats.
Yeah.
We saw the trailer. But instead of like getting mad at us or like people reporting us, everyone else just joined in. Like, somehow on a Sunday night, there were 30 people
should.
At Cats. And like the initial rough cut that like has a bunch of CGI mistakes.
So this is before they put out that update?
Yeah.
Oh.
And like, it was the most like transcendent experience I'd ever had in a movie theater. Like, I
wouldn't think Cats and transcendent being associated with each other.
But yeah, like, people were laughing at a lot of things I was throwing out there. I was laughing at so much that was being said. And like, it felt like an eternal movie, but it was just so fun. And like, I worked in a movie theater for 5 years and like, mm-hmm. had a lot of like, oh, company party, we're gonna go to, none of that compared to how much fun I had at Cats. And from there, like, once it came out on like streaming and home video, I was like, I gotta get high and show this to people. Like, other people need to know. And like, once in a while I'd find someone that like they were genuinely into it and like seeing it, and I have no doubt seen Cats at least 20 times, and a lot of those were within the first 2 years it came out. And I am not one for rewatching movies, but like, if you judge movies not by how good the plot is, the character development, or any of that superficial crap, but instead judge movies by how little they are, like any other movie you've ever seen, Cats is one of the greatest movies of all time. I guarantee you have not seen anything like it. And so, like, this was just every person that, like, I really care about eventually gets high and watches Cats with me. And so Ari and I had only, like, been seeing each other for about a month, month and a half. And so this was her coming over and, like, hey, let's have a substance, we'll say it was cocktails, and we'll watch Cats after Rudolph, and like, let Rudolph be the one that like we start to, you know, get our buzz, and then put on Cats. And yeah, like, sure enough, didn't disappoint. Once you're like in a weird headspace, like, everyone makes fun of how bad those visuals are, but like, if you're for any reason in a headspace where visuals are altered, all of a sudden, these special effects are way different. Like, the patterns on the cat's fur are like a Rorschach test. Like, there's like moving patterns. You see stuff in the background. It goes from being bad CGI to like transcendent, next level, mind bending CGI.
I'm trying to figure out if this is a nightmare or if this is something
like
I need to do.
Amateur hour. I love that Rudolph's your pregame for the whole of this as well. Like, it makes it so much better.
Yeah, I have seen Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, I think, every year of my life. Like, my official birthday is 2 days before Christmas, so I think I've seen it, like, every year since I was born, mm-hmm. and I am not going to let that tradition slip, so I had to get it in on Christmas Day, and what a perfect one to just, like, let be background noise while, I don't know, I'm...
See, I kind of have a similar tradition, not as long, obviously, but... Like, I do Shaun of the Dead every year.
Hmm.
And
on Christmas?
No.
Oh.
No. However, James Bond plays every year on Thanksgiving and Christmas. It doesn't matter which one, any James Bond movie. It's just because I grew up and we'd go over to my grandparents and they'd have the TV just playing in the background and it was always a James Bond movie.
Perfect.
But no, my tradition is Shaun of the Dead.
Hmm.
One of my favorite movies of all time. And so every Halloween, it just so happens, Flicks Brewhouse actually plays it during the month of Halloween. And I have like 4 or 5 cups that you get from going to that event just because I love that movie so much. Hmm. But yeah, no, I'm sorry. That was just one of my traditions. I get it.
So I would like to ask both of you, like, so I've had queer friends, trans friends, like, listen to It's Morphin Time, and, like, it really resonates with them on a very personal level, like, to their lived experience. I'd really like to know is, like, two, from what I know, cis straight men, like, tell me about, like, what you got out of it, or, like, especially you, Austin, like, you said you've listened to it, like, a dozen times.
A few different things. First, as a podcaster, just the way that it's put together, the production quality is insane. It's mm-hmm. my favorite of all time. I think that I deal with this like existential crisis a lot. And so having never done LSD to be with someone on their journey as they retell their first acid trip is fascinating to me. And again, to go back to the production, the way that that's all put together with the sound effects and the music, it really helps pull you in. But I think you talking about like, I am experiencing my death over and over and over again, but also I am responsible for like every good thing I've ever done is self-love. Every bad thing I've ever done is also self-hate. And like this whole sort of existential crisis that umbrella that kind of covers all of that. I identify with that. And then just in terms of like the things that I'm interested in as well, I'm obviously very interested in Power Rangers. It's my first favorite television show. Mm-hmm. I was maybe 3 or 4 years old. My uncle Shane is a huge nerd. So, and we all lived in the same town. He lived in an apartment just down the road from where my grandparents lived and where I grew up. So after school, almost every day, like he would come over and we would watch Power Rangers together. He also got me into like pro wrestling and stuff like that. But so for you to take Power Rangers and then equate that to your transformation, from more masculine to feminine, was awesome. And then somehow you brought Bo Burnham into the story. And yep. I love that man more than most human beings on this earth, even though, like you say, he does seem depressed as shit at all times. Just the way that the story was told was, I mean, it doesn't matter if you are a member of the LGBT community or not. Like, that's a story that I think anyone that listens to it, it's going to resonate with anybody.
Which I want to touch on that Bo Burnham for a second.
Yeah, yeah. Like, people are like, what the fuck are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, so like when I was like experiencing my life outside of myself, like I kept seeing myself as different things. Like it was me that was actually on stage, then passing all these performers. Or like my life was a cautionary tale. Like I was literally in a DARE commercial about this poor guy that did drugs and like pissed his future away. And then like I think part of the connection with like Bo Burnham is I saw like all of this like performance, comedy, irony, like is present in Bo Burnham, something I'd been listening to since middle school, who I think also for people of our level, like Bo Burnham is kind of the peak as far as like a self-made artist of just yep. taking what talents you have and what you have in your bedroom and then just getting it out there in the right way at the right time, resonating with the right people, and like giving up a lot of your foundational young experiences to pursue this. So I do think like that's maybe where some of that subconsciously was coming from.
Sure.
Like that's like peak success if everything I did took off. But One, Bo Burnham, there's like no public way to get a hold of him. Like, I would love for him to hear It's Morphin Time for a couple reasons. Like, first, I think I just want his blessing because, like, there's a couple remixes of his music. Yep. I'd like to know how he feels about it because, like, Inside was a very big inspiration of, like, taking some traumatic experience or, like, what you're going through and putting it out in the best possible way that one person can. Like, it was that and Midnight Gospel making me want to make, like, the closest thing to that I can with my current skill level.
Yep.
Also, like, there's a pattern in online trans people of, like, saying such and such public figure or such and such past public figure that's not with us is trans, and we know from all these things. Like, I hear there's a lot of signs that Kurt Cobain might have been a trans woman, and I hate when I see people say, like, oh, hormones could have saved her. And it's like, really? Being a trans woman in the 90s would have made things better for them?
Right?
Like, that's just so super disrespectful to act like, yes, the experience of being a trans woman in the 90s would have made them not end their life. We don't know that, and, like, it's not our place to say that, like, that's what they were experiencing. And, like, I know there is a contingent of people there saying, like, oh, we relate to Bo Burnham as trans people, or, like, there's that white woman Instagram video inside that I'm like, Bo, how much did you like taking these glamour shots and stuff? But I don't want to be part of that. And whether Bo is A, like, trans and figuring that out, or maybe just reclaiming their life now that they can have a new identity, like, that might be a big thing for them. Or if it's something they're going to come out with later, like, whether or not they're trans, I don't want to take anything from their moment. Like, I don't want to add to this choir of online, like, Twitter trolls being like, Bo Burnham's trans, because, like, no one deserves that, and it's no one's place to put that on anyone else. And if they are trans, I don't want to, like, use their art to come out for myself when that's something that should belong to them.
Understandable.
So if anyone out there hears this and knows how to, like, run this past Bo, please do. Like, it's something I worry about at least once a week.
Listen, selfishly, if someone's listening to our podcast and knows how to get a hold of Bo Burnham, also let us know. That'd be awesome.
Right?
So,
which I gotta thank you, by the way. Like, you talk about this being like the best podcast you've ever heard. It probably still only has around like 350 listens or so, maybe higher at this point. A lot of the episodes I do don't even have 100 listens, if I'm honest. So, like, y'all have much bigger following than I do. And I know a lot of that's because I have such a niche interest in both giant-sized violence and transcending comics. Like, there's not a lot of comic readers in the U.S. regardless. So, like, I'm just not going to get a big audience. But that's part of what's going to drive me to start this third podcast of Living Narratives, just to be like, okay, let's get a third, like, something that anyone might like this. Like, no one has that hang up. Like, I don't really read comics, so I'm not going to check this out.
That's and I love people who podcast and have their own niche things. And I've done that before, too. You know, I've had a podcast that was specifically about pro wrestling. And then when we started this, I was like, it's going to be all pop culture stuff. It's going to be the stuff that we have in common. And then I think the more that we do it, I'm just like, well, this episode can be pro wrestling, and then this episode can be about video games, and then this episode can be about, and that might not be the best way to do it, but
it works for us.
Cause I'm sure there's people that tune in and they're like, oh, they're talking about Helldivers on this episode. I fucking love Helldivers. Like, I love video games. I'll listen to that. And then we'll have someone from the, you know, local pro wrestling scene on, and they'll be like, I'm not interested in that. I hope that people will listen to every episode and they'll be like, you know what? Maybe I do have more in common with pro wrestling than I thought I did, or, you know, maybe I do like video games more than I thought I did, or they'll hear you talk about some fucking obscure movie from, you know, 1824, and they'll be like, oh shit, like, maybe I'll check it out, you know. But I think it keeps me engaged with my own podcast to have
a variety
of different things, you know, off the wall. But
yeah, and I will say, like, that helps me navigate your episodes a bit. Like, one, y'all do a great job both in explaining your interests yourself and, like, in getting guests to talk about these things in an interesting way. Like, I do not care about wrestling at all. Like, I've already got actual superheroes. I've already got manga and anime. Yep. I don't need the version for rednecks.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I see. It's what I see WWE as. But if
dude,
I...
Let me tell you, I got my wife into pro wrestling. Wow. And she is a doctor. And I was like, you might have the highest IQ of any professional wrestling fan on the planet. And that's no joke.
It's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have all kinds of head trauma from growing up and recreating these moves, though. Statistically, oh. The smartest wrestling.
Dude, is that why I'm dumb? That's probably why I'm dumb.
One of the reasons.
I don't know. Yeah. Have you seen our school? Not great. Well,
you're the one wearing the Nottoway Valley soccer shirt. Our team sucks.
And I got bullied. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I get it.
Yeah. But y'all do a great job, like, making me interested, especially when y'all get into like independent wrestling.
Yeah,
I love hearing about that, like the stuff that is just people doing it because they love it, not because the highest version is some super corrupt, messed up corporate thing. But it does make it seem a little more approachable. Or like, even if like I wouldn't listen to your podcast if it was just a WWE podcast.
Yeah,
but I do get to hear you get into it and like share that appeal and like expose me to a world of like all the ins and outs of what's it like to be one of these guys, but not in the WWE.
Yeah,
I would like, that's interesting. Highly, highly recommend that you go to an indie show at some point because you will have a blast.
The next time, so there is a what we call a super indie. So there's these local indies. Which are like people that live and work in Des Moines, Iowa, and then they'll wrestle in Des Moines, Iowa. So it's like, damn, like my accountant is a professional wrestler, you know, but then, then you have the super indies, like the Wrestling Revolver, which comes around maybe every 2 to 3 months. And they are international superstars that happen to have a contract with a major company to where they can wrestle these shows as well. And it's usually about 1,000 people in the crowd, 1,500 people. And they're people that you see on TV or they're people that wrestle in the bigger indies like in New York, Boston, whatever. And they come on and put on the most ridiculous show ever. And then just the environment is insane. So if you ever want to go to a Wrestling Revolver show or even a local indie, let me know.
I have been to one WWE show, though.
They're fun, too.
Yeah, the traveling like, stuff, pretty
seeing,
cool.
Seeing wrestling in a smaller, more intimate environment. Especially
when they can get away with a lot more.
I think the Revolver shows just the athleticism is on a whole other level. Not that the people that wrestle in WWE are not athletic, but there is just, it's insane. It's just a different style of wrestling. It's the style that I fell in love with when I found indie wrestling in like 2008. So it's a whole other thing.
Like you talk it up in a way that makes me really interested to the point of like, oh, so they've got like wrestling alter egos, like superheroes. Yeah. Like,
yes.
Should I do that?
Look, yes.
But then I'm like, wait, no, I'm way too pretty. And that keeps me yes. away. Like,
I totally understand.
I have to say, as someone who did not spend most of their life as a pretty woman, going through life as a pretty woman now, awesome. 100% recommend. If you haven't tried it yet and you have the opportunity, give it a shot.
That was so when I wrestled for a few years in real life, small bitch in a wrestling ring. I am the biggest shit talking like villain ever. And I loved that. Like the real me just wants to be loved by everyone. But when I wrestle, I can't wait to make like we wrestled at a homecoming show, like a high school homecoming show. On like a Thursday night and there was like 250 people there and it's all kids. And like, there's nothing better than having 250 kids flip you off, call you racial slurs. It's like, yes, just fucking hate me.
Fuel me. Yes.
And then, you know,
Xbox Live was just a taste of the shower.
Yeah. I was like, and then me, I'm 5'6", like a legit 5'6". In professional wrestling, I'm 5'8". But in real life, I'm 5'6", and a dude that's a legit 6'6" comes out and just beats the shit out of me for like 7 minutes. It's the best thing in the world. Pro wrestling is the shit. I love it. Anyway, to you, friend.
Yes.
Yeah. What, the same question that she asked, but to you. I feel like I took over too much time here.
No. Wow. Okay. The pacing of the entire episode was great. Where you go from slow and deliberate to frantic energy, like especially describing your trip, like you just knew how to sell that so well. And it's very hard as a podcaster, as a storyteller, as anybody, to find the proper way to vocally pace everything. So, like, we could be talking about something normal, like a movie or a video game, and just have it be just this bullet points throughout. But the way you do it and the way you specifically went from kind of easing us into it, and then it's like everything was just crashing around you, just coming at you so fast, and you picked up the pace and you kept it going, was just that was probably one of my favorite parts. I love how you talked about your grandfather. You talked about your decisions in choosing a name. How you memorialized JDF. How you talked about Kevin Conroy, which, if I'm being completely honest, when you talked about Kevin, I was a little beside myself, just because I sat there and I thought, you know, I think I know. I think I knew that he was gay. And but the thought never crossed to me, because it was never important to me. What was important to me was the fact that he just was here. He was a voice. And I'm not saying that to make who he was any less. It's just, it was never a thing that would have bothered me. And the fact that he was able to be this image, he was able to be this voice in the Arkham games, in you know, the one time he was live action in a CW show, you know, his final performance in Suicide Squad, which, chef's kiss, you know, that's who he was. And he could have been gay, and he would have been the straightest gay man you ever seen this side of Neil Patrick Harris. You know what I mean? So for you to just go in detail and go in length about his struggles and about how he contributed to a community was something, especially for people that had no idea that he was gay and that could only associate him through being Batman and being just this figure, you know. That was something special for me to just kind of process and sit through. You know, the way you went into JDF as well was real special. Again, and that resonated with me, because I was, man, I'm Power Rangers through and through. You know, one of my favorites was Tommy, you know. Billy was, oddly enough, one of my favorites. And
fucking nerd.
Yeah. And
wasn't he just like the nicest fucking dude?
He was amazing. Yeah. Like, I had a chance to talk with him when we were trying to get him to.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it couldn't happen, but he was very attentive, and I feel like this is pretty much the case with almost any ranger that you come across. Is like they know, they've been doing this long enough. This is who they are. Like they make sure that you are important. They make sure you are heard and that you have that attention that you need.
Just to piggyback off of what Trevor said, and I think I get it now. I think I realize why I like this podcast so much, this episode of your podcast, is that despite the fact that I'm a podcaster and it's very audio heavy, I'm a very visual learner. And I don't think I've ever listened to a piece of work where I could just close my eyes and like, I'm just right there with you, right? Like you're telling the story about meeting JDF to his point when he makes you feel like you're very, very important despite the fact that he's the celebrity. And you're telling the story about how, you know, you're telling him how much he means to you. And then he whips his phone out and he video records it. Like that's very special. Mm. And the way that you tell it, like I'm right there with you, you know, at Des Moines Con with you. And then obviously the sound, like I said before, the sound effects, the music, all of that, it just brings you right into that story. Like we're all at the music festival tripping balls with you. You know what I mean?
The way you wove in the Power Rangers theme song with when that got me too.
Yeah. We'll put a link in the video description of this podcast to that particular podcast. Cause I think
for sure
everyone that likes the same things that we're into, they're going to get just as much out of it as we did. So we're getting to the end of the first part of this episode. Mm-hmm. You're going to be back next week. And by next week, I mean 10 minutes from now.
it's kind of like that one time we went to Raw. Why are you booing? We're going to see it 20 minutes.
Yeah. We went to Monday Night Raw WWE show and they recorded two episodes back to back and it was like, we're not fighting this week. We're waiting until next week. And all these rednecks are like booing. Cause it's like, and next week.
What was it? It was Bobby Lashley got proposed to and he got married the next episode.
Yeah, like, they're going to still be here. Like, anyway,
in this case,
wrestling
though,
fans are idiots.
What these two don't know is I'm currently tripping balls. So that 10 minutes is a week.
Let's go.
In tripping time.
Yeah.
I knew it the whole time. I saw it in your eyes. All right. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah. Thanks so much for all the
time. This is a pretty long drive, probably longer than most of our guests have. So I appreciate it so much. Mm. Thank you.
Yeah. My pleasure.